Hello, it's Friday, May 12th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio, which can be found at www.wingtv.net. It's a Friday here. We're looking forward to going into the weekend. And we're coming to you today from State College, Pennsylvania, also known as Happy Valley, in the United States of America. And Lisa, that's the great United States of America, where freedom of speech and freedom of the press are still one of our rights, and this is a right that we cherish so much that we exercise it every single day here on Wing TV. Before we hop into things, we want to extend a big thank you to Visigoth, who does a radio show called From the Grassy Knoll, and he's in another new incarnation of that show. He's doing it every night now, Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 o'clock p.m., and every Wednesday is something...
That's Eastern Time.
Eastern Time, correct. And every Wednesday is something that he calls now Wing TV Wednesday, where we're going to be the guests from 5:30 until 7 o'clock. And if you want to find this show, it's something we've been tuning into now. Just go to visigoth.com, and you can listen to it there. Also, tomorrow night on Dateline NBC. Now, this is a show that we never watch. But tomorrow night at 8 o'clock p.m., they're going to run a show about a man named Ray Grecar.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the district attorney here until last April, where one morning where he drove to a little town called Lewisburg, home of Bucknell University, he mysteriously vanished into thin air.
Yeah, he just disappeared. And it's left this community just pondering what happened to Ray Grecar.
Exactly. So, Dateline NBC came into town this week, and they're going to... They did some interviews, and there's some breaking information coming out in this case. And it actually happened when Lisa and I were in Oklahoma City last year for the 10th anniversary of the OKC bombing. So if you're around tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, Saturday, Dateline NBC, check it out. And I think, you know, Lisa, we might even talk about this case again, or talk about this case next week, because it is very intriguing how a county's district attorney can just vanish in thin air at the snap of a finger.
And it looks like the police investigating this disappearance had knowledge of information and basically dismissed it or kept it from the public.
Well, they covered it up all for over a year until NBC came into town.
And now they're being challenged on it.
Yes, they are. Finally, I'd like everybody to go to the Wing TV homepage, take a look at Lisa's article. It's called Shanksville Flight 93, Many Mysteries, or Many Unanswered Questions Still Linger. And this is a very comprehensive overview of our trip to Shanksville, Indian Lake, and New Baltimore a couple of weeks ago. And as we said on Viz's show last night, I really think that Flight 93 now is the key, really the key to breaking open the whole 9/11 mystery.
Yeah, I can't wait to go back there. So
yeah, and I know Lisa keeps doing more research on this subject.
I'm going to keep looking into this.
Yeah, so take a look at that on the Wing TV homepage. Finally now, we're going to get to something that we mentioned on yesterday's show. On May 8th of this year, Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad sent a letter to President George Bush of the United States.
And apparently this is the first kind of communication like this from an Iranian head of state to an American president in 27 years.
That's correct. That's correct. And we mentioned this a little bit last night on Viz's show, but what is really striking, and this article or this letter is still on the Wing TV homepage, it's going to be there all weekend, is the striking differences or the approach, the philosophy towards the world, spirituality, and the future that President Ahmadinejad has in comparison to George Bush. Now, we're not coming out and being apologists for Ahmadinejad. What we're doing is simply showing how he's presenting a view of the world in comparison to the neocons and the people that are pulling George Bush's strings.
Ahmadinejad's letter addresses a long list of grievances against the United States, not only by the Iranian people, but people around the world and nations around the world. And he seeks to build this on a shared faith in God to resolve the problems facing all of us.
Right. And this translation that we're going off is an unofficial translation, but as far as we can determine, it's the most accurate. So he starts off his letters asking President Bush. He says, Mr. George Bush, President of the United States of America. He says, how can one justify the undeniable contradictions that exist in the international arena? And then, as Lisa said, he goes on and says to George Bush, as a follower of Jesus Christ. Now, I would throw some suspicion into that statement.
Well, he's giving Bush the benefit of the doubt. Bush calls himself a Christian.
Right. But he says, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, he says, how can you be in favor of proliferation of nuclear weapons? How can you be waging this quote-unquote war on terror? And how can you be attacking countries?
Right. How can you destroy the lives, reputations, and possessions of people? How can you occupy a country on a perception, a perceived possibility of weapons of mass destruction, which turns out eventually to be a lie? How can you kill hundreds of thousands of people, destroy water sources, agriculture, industry, break the sanctity of people's private homes? And how do you reconcile all these actions with following the teachings of Jesus Christ?
Right. He questions how hundreds of billions of dollars, and we know this is accurate because what we're spending on this war in the Middle East is astronomical. It's just sending our deficit through the roof, and there's hundreds of billions of dollars literally wasted. There's blood in the sand, and not only over 2,000 American deaths, I know there's quite a number more American deaths than that, but how many countless Iraqi deaths in the Middle East, and is it all, in the end, worth it?
He asks, at what price do these actions, you know, cost? Hundreds of billions of dollars spent, troops put in harm's way, they're taken away from their families and loved ones, their hands are stained with the blood of others. On a daily basis, you see soldiers committing suicide when they come back, they're depressed, they suffer from various types of ailments, and so forth. All on the pretext, well, the lie of weapons of mass destruction.
And that's a good point right there, because Ahmadinejad says that the entire pretext for this Iraqi war was the existence of weapons of mass destruction, which we all now know never existed in the first place in Iraq. So he goes on to say, yeah, Saddam Hussein was a dictator, he was a creep, we all know that, but that wasn't the announced reason why we went to war in Iraq initially. What was it? It was because they said there are weapons of mass destruction, and if we all go back to them famous speeches in 2002 where Dick Cheney and President Bush are mentioning, very conveniently, mushroom clouds going up into the sky, so they're saying, oh, they're going to nuke us, you know? But we know now there weren't any weapons of mass destruction.
And although he acknowledges Saddam as a murderous dictator, he says the war was not waged to topple him. He was toppled to achieve another goal. And he points out that for many years, Saddam was supported by the West.
That's true. That's very true. And he goes on again. He says, how can you reconcile all of this with Jesus? He says, look at what's going on in this prison called Guantanamo. Look at what's going on in these secret prisons, these secret CIA prisons in Europe. Look at what's going on, or did go on, in Abu Ghraib. Look at the judicial system that America is supposed to be based upon, where we don't give these prisoners a lawyer. We don't even say what charges are filed against them.
Right.
And how can you justify this in not only a belief, a stated belief in Jesus, but the tenets of what America was founded upon.
Right. He says he can't correlate the abduction of a person and him or her being kept in a secret prison with the provisions of any judicial system. And he says, how do such actions correspond with Christian values?
Right.
Or
then,
the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah. Then we get in to the nation of Israel. And he says, rightly so, that Israel is a new country. He says, if you go back and look at maps before the 1940s, there is no country known as Israel. It didn't exist. The only reason it was created was on the back of this quote-unquote 6 million dead figure that arose from quote-unquote the Holocaust.
Right.
Okay? But what cost has the world really paid for the creation of this terrorist nation? That's my word. This terrorist nation known as Israel.
Yeah, he says, at what cost? Thousands killed in the process, millions of indigenous people made refugees, countless acres and acres and acres of farmland, olive plantations, towns, villages destroyed. He calls this an ongoing tragedy for 60 years now. And he says that this regime, this established regime, shows no mercy, even to kids, destroys houses while occupants are still in them, announces its plans and lists beforehand to assassinate Palestinian figures, and imprisons thousands of Palestinians.
Look what happened to Rachel Corrie. Look what happened to the USS Liberty.
Right.
These are just two of many examples of the crimes in which Israel has committed and continues to commit to this very day.
And he questions Bush and says, why is this regime being supported?
Right.
Is support for them in line with the teachings of Jesus or Moses or liberal values?
Right. Now, this is a vital, vital point, because when Jesus began his ministry, who was he waging war against primarily? Was it the Romans? No. Was it Satan? No. Jesus was waging his war against the Jewish religious hierarchy.
Remember, Zionism wasn't coined, that term wasn't coined back then.
Yeah, that was only coined in the late 1800s. Jesus' primary enemy was the Jewish religion.
Mm-hmm.
The Jewish religion. And this is really the foundation of everything we have to keep in mind, because Jesus was waging a war against the very people who in his time would be called neocons or Zionists. They back then were called Pharisees or Sadducees, but they're the exact same people, and this is the evil of the world, Israel and the Jewish religion.
He goes on to say, why is it that any technological or scientific achievement reached in the Middle East regions translated into and portrayed as a threat to the Zionist regime? Is not scientific research and development one of the basic rights of nations? And he says, aside from the Middle Ages, in what other point in history has scientific or technical progress been a crime?
Right. He says that America prides itself on its democracy and on its technology, okay? Yet, when we have an election in Palestine and they democratically elect a group of leaders primarily from Hamas, then all of a sudden we don't like democracy anymore. But how many times, Lisa, have we heard, well, we're in the Middle East now to spread democracy? Well, when democracy is allowed to thrive and to exist, we don't want it anymore. So have you ever heard the term situational ethics?
Mm-hmm.
You only use ethics when it fits you. Well, this is situational democracy, because we only want democracy, or it seems Israel and the neocons only want democracy when the people they like are elected.
Well, they redefined the word democracy.
Exactly.
Ahmadinejad says, is the possibility that scientific achievements might be used for military purposes reason enough to oppose science and technology altogether? He says, if such supposition is true, then all scientific disciplines, including physics, chemistry, mathematics, medicine, and engineering, must be opposed as well. He has a very good point there.
Well, what he's saying is that Israel views any kind of technological advancement as a threat to Israel, as if the entire universe revolves around Israel. And so what they're saying is technology outside of what benefits them is a crime against the world. And if this is true, then how can we justify, or Israel justify, their technology, especially when Israel sells their weaponry to a number of countries, including Red China?
Now, remember this. The U.S. accuses Iran of seeking to develop nuclear weapons, a charge which Tehran has steadfastly denied, saying it aims only to generate energy, which is not in violation of the non-proliferation treaty they signed.
Right. So what we have here, basically, is Israel is one of the world's biggest arms dealers. We know back in... You remember the Oliver North and Ronald Reagan, and we had the Iran-Contra scandal, and we had the freeing of our hostages from Iran. Well, who was the middleman there that was funneling all the arms, not only to Iran, but also during the Iran or the Iraq or the Contra deal? It was Israel.
Yeah.
Israel was the middleman that was being the conduit for all the arms sales for the technology now, because it exists outside of what they can control. They view it as a crime.
He tells Bush, lies have been told in the Iraqi matter, and what has been the result? He says, lying is reprehensible in any culture. He says, you do not like being lied to.
Right. Yet, ever since this administration, and we can only focus on the Bush administration, because if we go back to Clinton and if we go back to Bush 1 and Oliver North and Richard Nixon and on and on and on, they've all used deceit quite enormously.
Yeah, well, see, they don't like being lied to, but they don't have any problem with lying to everyone else.
Right, and especially with this administration, ever since 9/11, virtually everything they've said is their policy has been a lie, or their explanations. Just look at 9/11. There's hundreds and hundreds of lies. And then we go into the anthrax scares, which they lied about, WMDs, and on and on and on. He also brings up the Iranian coup d'etat
mm-hmm.
in 1953, where the Iranian president was overthrown by, of all people, the CIA.
Right. And remember, that was the legal government of that day. He cites the support for Saddam in the war against Iran, the mm-hmm. shooting down of the Iranian passenger plane, the freezing of the assets of the Iranian nation, and the increasing threats, anger, and displeasure vis-a-vis scientific and nuclear progress of the Iranian nation. Even though the people of Iran are championing this progress, you know, they want their nation to prosper. The rest of the world has a problem with this.
And see, the Iranian people still have a sour taste in their mouth from this overthrow of their president in the 50s by the CIA, because what was replaced then, or who replaced him, was the Shah, and what he created was the notorious Savak, which was one of the worst police forces, and they were used to do the United States' dirty work in the Middle East for the entirety of the Shah's reign. Well, in 1979, they got rid of the Shah, of course, but it still leaves a sour taste, because what we're looking at is, how would you feel, how would any country feel, if a foreign intelligence service came in and overthrew their government and put in one of their own puppet regimes?
Well, I'm not so sure that hasn't happened in our country.
Yeah, yeah. No.
He brings up 9/11 next, and he says that 9/11 was not a simple operation, and asks several questions of Mr. Bush, saying, could it be planned or executed without coordination with intelligence and security services or their extensive infiltration? He asks, why have the various aspects of the attacks been kept secret? Why are we not told who botched their responsibilities? And why aren't those responsible and the guilty parties identified and put on trial?
Now, that's
I'd like to know that too.
Those are questions that all of us in the 9/11 Truth Movement and the Patriot Movement have been asking for 4.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read that the first time, I thought, well, maybe this is one of the reasons why Condoleezza Rice dismissed this letter out of hand.
Well,
saying,
apparently she dismissed it before it was even really translated.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure she had a good idea after it was translated what was in it. And I don't think any of them want these questions on a global scale to be asked, especially of the President of the United States. He then goes on and says, or describes how 9/11 has been used to monger fear
mm-hmm.
among the people, and this is pushing forward an agenda that, again, we talk quite a bit about on Wing TV. Is anybody, anytime anybody tries to level heavy doses of fear upon you, they're doing it for one reason, to control you.
Right. He tells Bush, all governments have a duty to protect, to provide security and peace of mind for their citizens, yet for some years now, the people of your country, America, and neighbors of the world trouble spots do not have peace of mind. He says, after 9/11, instead of healing and tending to the emotional wounds of the survivors and the American people who had been immensely traumatized by the attacks, Western media only intensified the climate of fear and insecurity.
Right.
Now he brings up the media's role.
Yeah, and so the hype led to the war.
Right, and
the
kept
lies,
the people in fear.
Right, the lies of 9/11 then led to the lies of the WMDs in Iraq, and essentially everything we're seeing now is based upon a lie. But then, Ahmadinejad goes on to say, is the truth known to the Almighty lost as well? So he's saying, you might be able to fool some of your brain-dead neocon followers, and you might have the mass media spreading your lies. But guess who does know the ultimate truth? God does.
Right. In talking about the role of media, he says, in media charters, and we've said this many times before, in media charters, correct dissemination of information and honest reporting of a story are established tenets. He expresses deep regret with the disregard shown by certain Western media for these principles. And he said, the incessant media hype paved the way for an attack on Iraq. He asks, is this service to the American people? Is it possible to calculate the damages incurred from fear and panic?
Right. At this point, then, he says, citizens of any nation pay via their taxes to keep the government in operation, okay? The government, in return, is supposed to do what? Serve the people. So, all of this money that's been sucked out of the American people, that's going into the pockets of Halliburton and so forth, and we're spending on this war on Iraq, what good has it done? Maybe this money
for
the citizens. Maybe some of this should be used on more humanitarian causes. We hear about all the highways and the hospitals and the bridges and everything that's rebuilt in Iraq. What about for the citizens of this country?
Right. He points out that we have many problems in America. People living in poverty, many thousands of people homeless, unemployment being a huge problem. And he asks, can the gargantuan expenses of the war be explained away, and are they consistent with the aforementioned principles that he addresses in the beginning of his letter?
Right. Do we want peace in the world? Do we want security in the world or not? That's what it boils down to. And what this government is doing now, and what they've been doing, especially in regard to foreign policy, is they've become a puppet to special interest groups and the wealthy, many of whom we've mentioned already, Halliburton, the oil companies, but also Israel. Israel is the biggest special interest group that's dangling America on the puppet strings, and they're forcing us, it seems, to do their dirty work, not only in Iraq, but also now they're targeting Iran.
Well, we are of the belief that Israel uses the United States as a stick with which to beat its weapons, to beat its enemies. Ahmadinejad's main contention, he says, those in power have specific time in office. They do not rule indefinitely, and their names will be recorded in history and constantly judged in the immediate and distant futures. He said, the people will scrutinize our presidencies.
Right, and then he goes on to say,
do you think Bush ever thinks about that?
No, he's not concerned. I'll bet he doesn't think about these things either. Who defends the underprivileged, the
right.
little guy?
Right.
Do you think George Bush is a champion for the underdog? How about the rights of the people?
All people.
Yeah, around the world, including those in this country.
He said, do we defend the rights of all people, or do we impose wars on them, interfere illegally in their affairs, and establish hellish prisons and incarcerate some of them?
How about the truth? Is the truth the primary driving force between our policies right now? I sincerely doubt it. Who's on the side of the people? Do you think that this government is on the side of the little people, or are they the oppressors? And is all of this done via the force of a gun?
Right. He says, how long can the world tolerate this situation? How long must the people of the world pay for the incorrect decisions of some rulers? And he asks Bush, are you pleased with the current condition of the world?
That's a great question. And what's most important? Do we want to keep this vicious, bloody war machine rolling along indefinitely like something out of George Orwell's 1984? Or do we want to start making the world a better place?
Right. He says, there is ever-increasing global hatred of the American government, and his basic question is there no better way to interact with the rest of the world? Yeah. We have the same question.
Exactly. And I challenge anyone to tell me how the billions of dollars spent on this war machine in Iraq is making the world a better place, or this country a better place, because it absolutely isn't. Then, going back to religion once again, spirituality, he says, would the prophets like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Ishmael and Joseph and Jesus Christ, would they consider this the best way to operate if they were here now? Do you think they would, Lisa?
Don't ask me. You already know what my answer is. He says, the day will come when all humans will congregate before the court of the Almighty so that their deeds are examined. And he says, it won't be easy to calculate the actions of rulers because we must be answerable to our nations and all others whose lives have been directly or indirectly affected by our actions. And he asks Bush, if we all come to believe and abide by principles of worship of God, justice, respect for the dignity of man, belief in the last day, we can overcome these present problems of the world and improve our performance. And he's asking Bush, he's inviting Bush to promote peace, friendship, and justice.
He then goes on to quote one of the prophets saying, a bad ending belongs only to those who have chosen the life of this world and disobey him, meaning God, and oppresses his servants. In other words, they have power and riches and glory in this life. But Jesus tells us, he says, you better enjoy it now while you can. Because once this life ends, you certainly aren't going to have or enjoy these same things in the afterlife.
Ahmadinejad reminds Bush, too. He says, history tells us that repressive and cruel governments do not survive. And he tells Bush, the people of the world are not happy with the status quo, and they pay little heed to the promises and comments made by a number of influential world leaders. He says, many people around the world feel insecure and oppose the spreading of insecurity and war, and do not approve of or accept dubious policies. He says, people are protesting the gap which is increasing between the haves and the have-nots, between the rich countries and the poor countries.
Yeah, and
it's a shame that he has to remind the President of the United States about the current condition of the world.
Well, and he also reminds him that all of our deeds are going to ultimately be examined
and judged
by the Almighty. And I believe in this sincerely. Do you think that what the warmongers right now, the New World Order elite, those who are pulling the strings of this war machine, do you think their deeds are going to be judged favorably in the end? I don't. And, you know, it's really something to think about when you go back to, say, the Jewish Talmud. And I know John Kaminsky gave an interview last week where he said that the Zionists and the neocons justify everything they do with one book, the Talmud. And if you go into this book and read the vile writings, which is really the cornerstone of the Jewish religion, you'll see that these people don't believe in these principles of goodness. They justify lying and rape and anything else that furthers or promotes their agenda.
Uh-huh.
So they're basically saying that they play by an entirely different set of rules and playbook than the rest of the world is. They see themselves as superior to the rest of the rules that govern mankind.
Supposedly the reaction to this letter in Iran and the Middle East has been mixed, and Condi Rice's comment to the Associated Press regarding the letter says it isn't addressing the issues that we're dealing with in a concrete way. And I say she's not addressing this letter in any concrete way or specific or particular way either.
Right. Lastly, and this is on page 18, the final page of this letter, Ahmadinejad says, the people of the world have no faith in international organizations because their rights are not advocated by these organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who do you think he's talking about when he says international organizations?
The UN?
Well, that's a buzzword for the UN, and also things like the International Monetary Fund,
uh-huh,
the World Bank, and in essence, the New World Order itself. He says people don't believe or trust or have faith in the New World Order and I couldn't agree more. The only problem is the New World Order is still the one that has all the power and all the control
right.
on this planet.
Did you hear about what Putin said, the president of Moscow, on Wednesday, in blunt response to U.S. criticism of his domestic and foreign policies? He said Russia's going to boost its military strength over the next 5 years to ensure its ability to resist foreign pressures. He wants to maintain a balance between mm-hmm. forces. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, he called the United States Comrade Wolf, too.
Yeah, and what Putin has said in an article I read about this speech is also he was making or using buzzwords in reference to the New World Order and saying how Russia is more and more coming to distrust these global organizations. So go on to the Wing TV homepage if you haven't yet. It's the second lead article in the right-hand column. Read this letter to President Bush and think about it. Think about the Christian George Bush, this icon of the moral majority, and what he's doing. Because we know that you judge a tree by its fruits.
Absolutely.
And what is George Bush? Israel, the neocons, the Zionists, the international bankers, what kind of fruit are they producing with their war machine? And gauge that against what Ahmadinejad is saying in his letter.
Right. Let's close with Putin's quote here. He says, as they say, Comrade Wolf knows whom to swallow. He's referring to the United States. He says, he swallows without listening to anyone, nor does he intend to listen to anyone, judging by all appearances. That's a president of Russia.
Yeah. Now, it's very odd that we're saying these things today, because if you believe everything you've been brought up with when you went to school, mm-hmm. that America, the president, we're the ones that are supposed to be standing for and representing all of these virtuous things like truth, peace, looking out for the underdog, and on and on and on. Yet, a president now of a country that used to be called communist Russia, and the president of Iran, they're the ones reminding the American people and our president that, hey, I don't think you're following the very precepts upon which your country was founded.
Condi Rice, she said this, it's time for Iran to recognize that the international community is on one side of this divide and that Iran is on the other side of the divide. She says what needs to happen is that Iran needs to suspend its enrichment activities. So that's their way of addressing this whole situation. The only way it can be resolved is Iran has to agree not to do anything with nuclear energy and make Israel happy and make the United States happy and forget about making Iran happy. Those people don't deserve to progress as a nation technologically or scientifically. I guess the United States and Israel get to decide that
and just,
for the rest of the world.
Right, and just keep in mind who the ugly little force is behind all this.
That's right, Israel.
It's Israel.
It's always Israel.
And never forget that, because they are the most evil nation in the world today.
And we have to not be afraid to say that.
They're the
For
most
too long, people have been just afraid to say that that's what it is. It's Israel.
Yeah, they're the most dangerous country in the world also, and they pose the biggest threat to the world right now. Israel is the enemy. And you know what would please me more than anything is if George Bush and President Ahmadinejad and President Putin and the President of China would all come together and wipe Israel off the map to get them to get their evil out of the equation.
And we're telling the Jews all over the world, if you really are humane and you really are against human suffering and you're against the war, then you need to stand up to your Zionist regime.
Yeah, and there's also
and not support their criminal activities.
And one last thing, be very wary of these apologists. And I'm not mm-hmm. going to mention any names
Soon
right
we
now.
Will.
Yeah, but they come out and they say, oh, no, the Jewish religion is fine, Judaism is fine. It's just a handful of these bad little neocons and Zionists.
That's a limited hangout.
Right, but everything else is fine, okay? When they say that, they're diverting you away from the truth, and as Lisa said, she's correct, that's a limited hangout because these people spewing this nonsense are part of the evil that's permeating our world today. Be very wary of these people. Be very wary
of their rhetoric.
Right, of Israel. And read this letter from President Ahmadinejad. Hopefully, there are a few people in the halls of power somewhere in this country that are likewise reading it and saying, you know what? He might be on to something.
You know, I'm very impressed with Ahmadinejad's letter, and I'm very proud of him as a human being. And I wish I could say the same thing about George W. Bush.
Right. Everybody, enjoy your weekend. Tune in to Visigoth's show, as we said, every Monday through Friday. Saturday on Dateline, 8 o'clock. Take a look at that. Read Lisa's letter, or Lisa's article about Shanksville and Flight 93. She did a hell of a job. And we'll be back on Monday again. And remember, we're exercising our right to free speech and freedom of the press. Like it, hate it, or in the middle. But guess what? You have to respect the right to free speech, because once that's gone, it's all over.
Right. And if you don't, then I guess you don't believe in the ideals this country was founded upon.
Right. We'll be back on Monday. Until then, keep your eyes open, because there's a lot going on.
Have a great weekend, everyone.